Hey, Justin, you want to watch a movie?
Yeah, sure. What you got?
What do you think about...
No, I saw it last week.
Oh, what about...
Not again.
No. How about this?
Wait. You want me to watch what?
So, Justin, what'd you think of Escape from New York?
It was the slowest action movie I think I'd ever seen.
That's...
Not bad.
That might be accurate. It's John Carpenter movie through and through.
Yes, it is.
It's kind of like, have you ever seen Halloween?
Oh, yeah.
You know how that one, basically, it's 85 minutes of of wait and then 5 minutes of Mike. This is that. If you've ever seen John Carpenter's Vampires?
No.
Okay, well, one, you should. I mean, and this is one that we don't need to do for a podcast. I think you'd like it. But it's a very slow movie.
Uh-huh.
You know, with moments of action.
Ah.
John Carpenter really likes to try to set tension. He really likes to keep you on edge. When's the thing going to happen? And then eventually you go, is the thing going to happen? And then when it happens, it's like, wow, a thing happened.
But enough about John Carpenter.
Welcome to You Want Me to Watch What? A podcast for Justin and I and for all of you who listen in. Justin and I have seen thousands of movies individually and together. And this podcast is about the ones that slip under our respective radars.
Yep.
Things that just missed us for whatever reason. And then we talk about them and you get to listen in. Congratulations. Willkommen. Bienvenue. Welcome.
Hi.
Come on in. This one, Escape from New York. A Kurt Russell, John Carpenter action movie. Drama.
Yes.
And dark. Watch it in a dark room, folks. Because there is a Blu-ray release of this. I have no idea if they made it easier to see.
Probably not.
And we'll get into why it's so dark in a little bit.
Yes.
But, all right. The year 1988. Amidst war with China and the Soviet Union and a crime rate that has risen 400% because it's the 80s. The United States government says, you know, Manhattan, you know, the seat of pretty much our entire financial industry. We're going to put a wall around that and turn it into a maximum security prison. Eventually, is it Rockstar that did the Batman games?
Yes.
Eventually, they're going to take that same idea for Batman Arkham City.
Yes.
Anyway, the island is walled off from the outside world. It is under heavy police surveillance. It is Australia. You know,
yeah.
You go in, there is no parole. There is no getting out. You make do with what you can. Live, join whatever gang will keep you alive. And they know that it's hard because at the prisoner, like, incoming, you hear the voice on the intercom. It's like, you know, the last transport to Manhattan Island is in. So if you wish to, you know, you can also just terminate and be cremated. That's not a great system.
No.
But I am no prisonologist.
Well, the cremation is because that... takes up less space, ultimately.
Well, clearly, it takes up less space, and then you can be fertilizer.
Yeah.
High in potassium, I believe we are.
Yes.
And phosphorus. Like, 9 years after they wall off Manhattan, the president is flying to a peace summit, and Air Force One is hijacked by terrorists. How? We don't know. Why? We don't really know, other than they don't like him.
That's not important.
It's not important. What does happen is, this is... You know, this film is being made in the 1980s, like 1981, and they fly a plane into a building, and I had a moment.
So did I. And you'd seen this before.
Because they were flying toward the Twin Towers.
Which are very present in this movie.
And it's like, huh, I was not expecting that moment to rear its head again.
Thankfully, it wasn't those buildings the plane hit.
It wasn't.
It was some unnamed building.
So everyone dies except the president, played by Donald, is it Pleasance? Pleasance?
I thought it was Pleasance, yeah.
Blofeld.
Yeah.
Played by Blofeld. President Blofeld. He survives because...
No.
Yeah. Donald Pleasance played Blofeld in Honor Majesty's Secret Service. Or the one right after that, but I mean, didn't he?
No.
Oh.
He played the psychiatrist in Halloween.
Oh, am I... Who played Blofeld? We'll figure that out. Other.
That's a different podcast,
hey,
folks.
Y'all who are listening, who are on the Discord, tell us.
Yeah.
You know, just right after this in the new, you know, in the new episodes tab, this is going to go up. And just right after that, just remind me, because I've gotten all of my bald actors mixed up. Who played Blofeld?
Yeah. There's been three of them. Who was it?
So, all right, Donald Pleasance, who was, definitely know him as the psychiatrist in Halloween.
Yes.
So, he survives because he's put into a big egg.
Yeah, a big red egg.
Big red egg escape pod that drops into Manhattan. So, the police are dispatched to go in. It's nighttime. They're going in, sunset. They're going in to get him, and the place is empty. And then comes out a dude who's like the lieutenant to one of the main bad guys, the Duke. And he's a little bit nuts. Broomhead McGee.
Yeah.
I think his actual name is like Romero or something.
Yeah, Broomhead is fine.
But Broomhead McGee is going to work just fine. And Broomhead McGee basically tells the cops, "We've got the president. If you try to get him, we'll kill him. If you're still here in 20 seconds, we'll kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And if you send anyone after him, we'll kill him." 1918.
Yeah.
So the cops all leave, you know, including Lee Van Cleef, who's playing our main character there. You know, one of our main antagonists.
Yes.
He's not a villain. He's an antagonist. And he gets the idea that Lee Van Cleef, you know, Hulk... is got the idea, I'm going to make a deal with Snake Plissken. Snake Plissken, played by Kurt Russell, we have no idea anything about this guy, other than he used to be in the Special Forces, and he got arrested stealing from the Federal Reserve.
And he has an eye patch.
And he has an eye patch. That's about it.
Yeah.
We don't know, but it seems everybody knows this guy. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows about Snake Plissken. And... It's Kurt Russell's first real action hero-y kind of role, and he spends a lot of time snarling ineffectually.
Yes.
Ineffectively. Is like, I don't know what you're going for, but it's not terribly intimidating, Kurt. He gets better at it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, through the movie, he gets better at it. So, I think it's just a case of he's young. Here's the deal. We need you to go get the president. You do that, you'll get a presidential pardon. Oh, by the way, now that you've agreed to this, we've got some vaccines to give you to make sure that you don't catch the plague and bring it back out.
Mm-hmm.
Psych, those are not vaccines. Those are explosives, micro-explosives that we've just put into your neck that in 22 hours are going to detonate and kill you.
Yes.
Unless you bring the president back.
Yes.
So they give him a glider. They fly him up. He lands on top of the World Trade Center. Again, one of those moments.
Mm-hmm.
Little clenchy. And Snake follows the president tracker to a theater, finds it on the wrist of a vagrant, you know. He finds the cabbie, you know, played by Ernest Borgnine, who I am convinced is not a prisoner at all, but like the 10 years before when they're like, hey, you got to evacuate New York. He's just like, I'm working here.
Yeah.
You know, and just put some armor on his cab and just kept right on working.
Yeah, because he said he's been driving the city for 30 years, so.
It's just, I don't think he was actually a criminal. I think he just liked the place.
Yeah.
I know where everything is.
You want me to move to Jersey?
Tuck. So Snake meets these people. He sees the vagrant. The vagrant's got the president's like bio tracker on, which means president must be dead. How else would this get on some hobo? Vagrant.
Yes.
Hobo is trains.
Yes.
Vagrant. Snake radios back to headquarters, and he's like, no, you come back with the president or you're dead. Okay, go inspect the escape pod. Get ambushed by a bunch of people who were living in the sewers in what is very much a horror movie, slasher movie kind of scene.
Yes.
You know, where all of the manhole covers are being slid apart and everybody's getting out and starting to run, and there's that ding, 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 ding kind of in the...
Yeah.
And it's like, that's where you're at home, John.
Yeah.
That's where you're at home. You're doing good here. This is a tense kind
yes,
of
yes, this kind is of a thing, good scene.
Where everyone's being, you know, they're going after Snake. He's got a gun and they're still chasing after him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's climbing up buildings and breaking windows and here, there, and everywhere. It's a good scene. He gets saved by Cabby. You know, again, who throws a Molotov cocktail the entire time doing the stereotypical cabby, you know, New York cabby, you know, just
talk.
Prattle.
Yeah.
Cabby takes Snake to find the Brain, who's an advisor to the Duke. The Duke is the one who has the president. Plans on putting the president basically at the front of a colonnade in order to drive across the bridge in order to escape.
Yep.
I'm sure it'll work perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Turns out that Brain used to work with Snake, but things went bad.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of stuff kind of happens. Anyway, they get to a point where Snake gets shot in the leg by a crossbow.
Yeah.
And then that's after he almost rescues the president.
Yes.
And then because he's been shot in the leg, he is basically captured by the Duke's men. Forced to fight in a cage match against some big dude, first with baseball bats, then with trash can lids and baseball bats with nails through them.
Yes.
They fight. Snake wins. Everyone starts cheering for him like it's the end of a Rocky movie. You know, Snake, 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 Snake. You know. Everyone runs away. We find out at this point that the whole reason for the president is not because they want the president back. It's because the president, who has a briefcase chained to his arm, has a little cassette tape. Kids, cassette tapes were little magnetic strips of ribbon that you could record things on. And with a special machine called a cassette deck or cassette player, you could decode these magnetic strips and hear sounds.
The thing that Star-Lord uses in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Volume 1.
Volume 1.
Because in Volume 2, he had a Zune.
Yes. Yeah.
So, kids, a Zune was...
Oh, my God. The less said about Zunes, the better.
Yes. Agreed. We will absolutely not edit that out, but we'll pretend we did for the purposes of our conversation right now.
Go.
Okay. So, the cassette tape contains information about nuclear fusion. The president wants to use it basically as a peace offering with Russia and China to try to get, okay, now everyone will have unlimited power supply. We don't have to be doing all this fighting anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The summit at which all these powers are is over at the deadline. So that was what the 24 hours was for Snake to mm-hmm. get the president out, is because after that summit's over, opportunity's lost. We don't care. We've got a vice president who's going to fill in. You know, not a big deal. What has been a very long story, now shortened a bit, is that Snake gets the president and a couple of his, you know, the Duke and or the
Brain.
Brain and the Brain's girlfriend. And they get across the bridge, sort of, in one of the worst special effects of a cab blowing up ever.
Mm-hmm.
They get to the wall. The president gets up into the wall. As Snake is about to go up, the Duke shows back up and starts shooting. The president shoots the Duke. Snake gets over. He gets the bombs taken care of, so he's not going to blow up. And he has handed over the tape to Hawk, the cop. And he goes and he talks to the president. He's like, you know, we saved you, but a lot of people died. What do you think about that? And the president just kind of dismisses him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just clearly doesn't give two shits
no.
about all of that went into rescuing him. He says, well, I just want to thank them too when they're, you know, and what they've done for this nation. And so Snake walks away. And as the president makes his speech and they get ready to play the tape, what plays is one of Cabby's swing cassettes.
Sounds like the theme to American Bandstand.
And there is Snake walking away, ripping out, you know, this tape and just ripping it to shreds.
Yeah.
Credits.
He's made the switch.
Yep. It is a slow movie.
Mm-hmm.
That there is no doubt about that. It's a dark movie. Here's the why. They did not have the budget to film in New York.
Right.
They filmed in St. Louis.
East St. Louis, Illinois.
East St. Louis. Well, because East St. Louis had just had that big fire.
Uh-huh.
But they also, that theater, the Vaudeville Theater, was the Fox Theater in downtown St. Louis.
Yes.
Before it had been renovated. So it was starting to fall down.
Uh-huh.
And they were like, oh, we can use this because they're just probably going to tear it down anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got revitalized and rebuilt. And so I think there is actually still a poster in the Fox Theater of, like, for the escape from New York, you know, because, you know, part
Why
of it
not?
Was filmed there. It is slow, plotting even. It, I think that it was not meant to be, but I think it has become satirical.
Hmm.
Because the stereotypes that they're using for this are absolutely still stereotypes now.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of the different ways of heroing and villaining and so forth. But talk to me. You know, at least we didn't have flashing lights like we did for Alien.
That's true. It because of the location and the authenticity that they put into it with the lack of electricity in some places, and they even address that in the film, you know, like some places have lights, some don't, whatever. It is a very visually dark movie, and so mm-hmm. we ended up turning off all the lights when we watched it.
Yeah.
And even then it was like, is that
who are we seeing?
But it wasn't a bad movie. I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely is a John Carpenter movie. Now, I mean, and I say that my only real experience with him has been Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see, like, okay, this is a style of his.
Mm-hmm.
Because it starts off, okay, build the plot, build the world. A thing happens, and then lots and lots and lots of walking. A thing mm-hmm. happens. Lots and lots and lots and lots of walking. A thing happens. You know, it's just getting from point A to point B in the movie.
When so much of the movie is based around you've got no time, they should have shortened up a lot of that stuff.
Yes.
Make more things happen so that the passage of time feels like it's rushed.
Yes.
Because it felt, by about two-thirds into the movie, it's like, man, he's got all the time in the world.
He does, yeah. I will say I did enjoy the cars with the chandeliers as headlights.
I'm convinced that's just Isaac Hayes' personal vehicle.
Yeah, Isaac Hayes played the Duke, mm-hmm. and that was probably just his personal vehicle that he drove to set that day. And they're just like, you know what? Let's use it.
And it's brilliant.
It is.
Absolutely brilliant.
It is. Going back to the cab exploding on the bridge, I love how it was completely separated cleanly in the middle.
Cleanly in the middle, front seat to back seat, and everyone survives except Cabby.
Yeah.
For reasons.
Well, you know, his cab is gone. He should be gone.
You know what? That kind of works for me.
Because they build it in that he's so worried about the car. You know, I don't even leave her alone
mm-hmm.
for any, you know.
That's true. You know, I don't like to leave her alone out here. Don't like to leave her alone at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cab gets blown up. Cabby doesn't make it. It works.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
He had so much to live for yet.
So there was, towards the end, when the president gets up and over the wall and Snake is being hoisted up after everybody else mm-hmm. is dead, somebody flips a lever and Snake stops mid. Was that the president? So he could...
I think it was the president stopping him.
Yeah, because he stops Snake from coming up, which gives the Duke a chance to come out into the open, which gives the president a chance to kill Duke.
Mm-hmm.
And then he flips the lever. He's using Snake as bait.
Yeah, and I think that ultimately is the point where Snake probably would have realized, like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I'm just a...
Yeah.
You know.
There really is no genuine gratitude behind the president.
No.
It's like, you did your job. No. Now leave me alone.
Yeah. The president in this is not a likable character by design.
And honestly, I would say the way they kind of built him up, the president is probably more of a bumbling figurehead in this
yeah.
world. He has no real agency in the country. He's the president, so he wields the power visually.
Yeah, so they fix that in the second movie, Escape from L.A., which I will not be sharing with you, where the president is a hyper-stereotyped version of an evangelical that has turned the country into a theocracy.
Ah.
And so L.A., after a big earthquake, is basically made into a place where you send the moral, you know, criminals, the people, you know, so women who teach and, you know, homosexuals and so
okay.
forth. It's like, oh, we're going to, and
so,
and Snake has to go in to get the president's daughter who had stolen the key to a satellite thing that could render electronics dead. The president was going to use it to send countries that didn't agree with him back to the Stone Age.
Uh-huh.
So it's a sillier movie, but also is kind of scarier. And but by that point, you know, 15 years had gone by for Kurt Russell.
Mm-hmm.
And Kurt Russell was a much better action movie by that point.
So Escape from New York was set in the far-flung future of 1997.
Mm-hmm.
When was Escape from L.A. set?
About 15 years later.
Okay.
Or was it 4 years later? I don't remember. It came out in, like, the late 90s. I think they made the jump about the same because they wanted Snake to look
yeah.
older as well. This is a see it for me with a little cautionary asterisk, right? Because you got to be in the mood for this one.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Because it is measured, it is slow. It's a very good example of John Carpenter's type of filmmaking. It was one of his earlier efforts with the action genre. And very early for Kurt Russell. You know, he'd done a lot of the Disney stuff, and his next role was the voice of Copper in Fox and the Hound. So, I mean, Kurt Russell is still very much, very young.
Yeah.
You know, but also still very much in that, he's still very much in this Disney kind of place where he's in this movie primarily to try to not be Disney
mm-hmm.
anymore. One of the few actors to kind of get out of that without a terrible amount of,
yeah.
you know, scarring.
Yeah.
So, but I see it from me. Cautionary.
See it from me. When you were saying it's a good example of John Carpenter's work, if you want to see what John Carpenter does, but you're not a fan of horror movies, watch
yeah.
Escape from New York.
Yeah. I'm on board with that. So, that's what we got to say, and I guess it's your turn next time, right?
Yes. I think I got something.
Hello, meet Popsicles. Why don't you grab your multipass, a drink, and come sit with us?
Let's pick each other's brain. We want you to be part of our intimate conversation about science fiction topics.
Let's do this. Join us, and let's talk about science fiction topics in books, movies, TV shows, and games.
At Science Fiction Remnant, you are invited to listen in.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And don't forget your multipass.